Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to Kernels episode 11. I'm Christopher Hooten. Today we're going to mostly be talking about Game of Thrones. I might ask producer Matt to cue the intro music now, just because it's really dramatic as we talk about the last couple of days. But yeah, before we get into it, what have we been doing? Me and Jacob, I'm here with Jacob Stillworthy and Jack Shepherd.
Hello.
Me and Jacob were at a screening of The Beguiled last night, the new Sofia Coppola movie, which was, I don't know, stood out to me like The Bachelor, if it was set in the Civil War era. Kind of just a load of women fighting over a man.
Yeah.
You enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. I think it's not Sofia Coppola's best, but I think it's, like, if another filmmaker had made this, it'd probably be the highlight of their career, which speaks a lot about Sofia's career.
Yeah, and it looked incredible. Like, all the
absolutely beautifully shot.
Set in the deep south, all the shots of, like, the kind of mist and the trees.
Yeah. Oh, and the performances are, I mean, it's a film you go and see for, you know, if you go for the performances and stay for Sofia's direction, really. Nicole Kidman, absolutely brilliant.
Colin Farrell as well, great actor, let it be known. He sometimes gets some stick, but I think he does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Jack, you were doing interviews mostly yesterday, right?
Yeah, I was talking to the guys from Netflix on multiple new shows, like The Defenders, Ozark with Jason Bateman, Gypsy with Naomi Watts, and Death Note with Adam Wingard directing. Mm. That was... Actually, I'm not allowed to talk about that film. It wasn't finished, but...
Mate.
The other ones, though, like...
you don't want to talk about it,
I'm not allowed to talk about any of them. I'm allowed to talk about Gypsy, because that's out now. The rest are all embargoed still.
Yeah.
Actually, by the time this comes out, I don't think Ozark is, with Jason Bateman. And that was... That's quite odd. It's quite an odd series.
Be careful what you say.
But you can tell us, like, what's, you know, because the trailers and stuff are out there, like, what they're about. Because, I mean, Netflix fires out so many things now. I don't even know what Ozark and Gypsy are, even though they have, like, Naomi Watts and people in them.
Yeah.
Well, like, Gypsy's about this woman played by Naomi Watts who's, like, a therapist. And she's living this, like, you know, like a really average marriage, average life with kind of a nice husband, and she just wants a bit of spice in her life, so she goes off with this young woman.
Gypsy?
There's nothing. I don't know.
Where does, like, the gypsy come into this?
I don't know. I have no idea. I got two episodes in, and to be honest, it's one of the most dire shows I've ever watched. I got so
ever
bored.
Watched?
Yeah, no, wow. It was really.
Did you tell Naomi that?
I didn't tell Naomi that. She was lovely, and she's really good in it, but it's just. The story, nothing happens in it. Nothing happens in it at all, from what I gather. It's just she kind of fancies this younger woman, and that's about it. Like,
that's it.
Oh, they kind of, they play this, do they, don't they? And I think it's, they were saying it's an episode 7, they finally get to it. That's 7 hours of the show before they finally
That's
do
a big
something.
Ask, isn't it? Like, you get the thing of, like, you need to watch 3 or 4 episodes, but asking you to plug with it till 7 to get into it.
I mean, the reviews have been shocking.
Yeah, from what I've seen, you're not the only one who's thinking this.
No, they've been, pretty bad.
Poor Naomi Watts, man, she needs a new agent, because coming off the back of The Book of Henry as well.
Oh, yeah, which I've not seen, which it's kind of worked on me in that I want to see it just to see how bad actually
not
is.
Not to plug my own review, but if any of the listeners do want to check it out, it's definitely the worst film I've seen.
Well, the headline is it's the
film you, like...
Unsee movie of the year.
The unsee movie of the year. It's like, it's quite unfathomable how it got made.
Yeah.
Which makes it supremely entertaining, so everyone book you up for a ticket.
Oh, yeah. That's, I think it's going to work on me in that way. She's in, from what I hear, I'm a bit behind, but she's now one of the main characters in the new Twin Peaks.
That's true.
So David Lynch has been her saviour.
Yeah, and she is a great,
again.
She is a great actress.
She's a very good actress. Talking on, just really quickly, talking on Netflix, I was scrolling through yesterday and I saw that The Circle, the adaptation of David Beckers, is now on Netflix, which I had no idea, but I think apparently it was a consequence of the negative reviews. They were like, Netflix, they just kind of saw an easy buyout and like, let's put it on Netflix, not release it in cinemas. Which is quite interesting. Yeah.
That's interesting.
So it's now just appeared on Netflix.
It's been overshadowed by that other Okja. that came out the same week. Yeah, I think everyone's watching Okja now,
which was always meant to be a Netflix production. Like that was going to be a Netflix film, like Plan B. But The Circle, it's just been
That's really like the, I guess like the new straight to DVD thing.
It's precisely. To Netflix. Yeah, it gives it a new life.
So yeah, so Game of Thrones. This is the last podcast before it all starts again, and before as TV and film reporters, it takes over our lives. I mean, the phrasing of the question this week is: is Game of Thrones actually good? Sounds a bit kind of rhetorical. I didn't mean for it to. This is not necessarily bashing Game of Thrones, but more just like analysing the hype. Because I mean, is it fair to say it's like the most talked about hyped show? I mean, I guess it's hard to compare when you've got things like Dallas from back in the day, but in terms of since like the internet's been a factor, it does seem to be like, I can't think of anything that's been more talked about.
Right now, everyone's talking about it. I think everyone's getting excited for the new season. You can pretty much talk to any friend and mention Game of Thrones and they'll have an opinion on it,
Which
I think is unlike any other show currently airing.
Yeah. I think what's it, like, I can think of a few shows that have had that feverish internet discussion week on week or throughout the year leading up to a season, but I think with what's different about Game of Thrones is that it's everyone watching it, even if they're a fan or they're not.
Yeah.
Everyone still watches Game of Thrones. It's a must watch in that sense, whether you like it or you don't.
Yeah, we don't get preview episodes because it leaked a couple of seasons back, so I'll be up every Sunday night at 1 a.m. from now on.
The graveyard shift.
Which I secretly kind of enjoy.
It's a bit lonely sometimes.
It is a little bit, but I don't know, it's not too bad.
Little solitude.
Yeah, I once had we realised we had mice in our house, and I was sitting there watching Game of Thrones one night, and a little mouse just crawled out onto the carpet and just sat and watched Game of Thrones with me.
Even like mice are watching Game of Thrones.
Exactly. It's big in the rodent world. But yeah, I mean, the question of like whether it's of such high quality, I think is always just because of the hype. Like, it is a great show, but the amount of talk about it suggests as if it's like the greatest of all time. And I've just increasingly, as we've been covering it, as we've been watching it, starting to think that it is lacking in some areas, like choreography wise, production wise, VFX wise, it's like absolutely world leading, and all of those people should be applauded and are honoured at every opportunity at like technical awards and Emmys and stuff. But I just feel like on the dramatic side of things, maybe it's lacking in some areas. What do you guys think?
I think it recently it's become lacking. I think like the first three seasons I thoroughly enjoyed, and then since then it's almost fallen down because of the hype, because everyone has been talking about it, everyone's been watching it, and those first three seasons I feel like it didn't quite have that, and there wasn't this pressure on it. And now there is, and so every episode gets scrutinised so much. But then you realise, like, some of the dialogue just isn't that strong at all, and it's almost become about these action sequences. I think we were saying earlier, kind of, especially season 5, it's a really weak season, but it has this one amazing episode where it's like Hard Home, where you've got Jon Snow kind of fighting all the White Walkers and doing whatever, and it's incredible. It's so much, so great. But the rest of that season is pretty weak.
Yeah, I think you can tell that as well in the way that every season now is sort of reflected in the fact that people are like, what's the big battle going to be? Because never knows that the rest of it's going to be maybe not going to live up to their expectations. They're just craving this huge spectacle.
I'm going to go in on it. I actually think it's one of the... I don't think it's a well-written TV show at all. But then it's got me thinking, do I think the writing's not strong, or do I think the pacing's off with Game of Thrones? Because I always feel that by the end of an episode, so much should have happened and yet not a lot has.
Yeah.
And I don't mind that in TV usually, but with Game of Thrones I have a real issue with that because of the award success heaped upon it and the critical acclaim heaped upon it. I think it's all quite undeserving. Like you two said, in the early days I don't think that was the case. I think it started off like an engaging family drama, and it's now kind of coalesced into a bit of a sprawling mess filled with subpar characters that aren't as good as the ones that have been killed off before. And the ones that are still alive in it, who are great, who've been there from the beginning, I kind of resent these other characters for eating into their screen time. Like the Lannisters, for example, I think they're all great, but I think a lot of the other characters just don't really do it for me. And then you're spending a lot of time, you know, extended scenes of poor dialogue where I feel the writers are kind of, you can hear them creaking. I don't think that it comes to them easily, and it's probably because they've got to toe the line between the book, and they've got to appease the fans of the book as well as the TV show, and it's hard. But at the same time, I think they haven't been succeeding as well as they used to do in the first three seasons.
So which characters do you think are weaker?
I thought Ramsay Snow, I thought everyone went on about how great a villain he was. He was, you know, he lived up to the task of matching Joffrey and things like that. And he just, for me, he didn't. He was almost panto moustache.
Kind of caricature, wasn't it?
He was. Yeah. I don't mean it's nothing on Ewan Rian, how you say his name? Ewan Rian, the actor. I think he did the best he could do. But I think he was just given that role of, you know, Theon running away from him. And then he'd like pop up with his dogs at the end, like, you can't get away from me. And it was just, by the end, it was fairly rote, and Joffrey was. It just kind of highlighted how good Joffrey had been.
Yeah,
you know what a great character.
I think it almost got to that self-parodying point where it's kind of like, oh, he's going to kill someone because it's Game of Thrones. Mm. Oh, it's a main character is going to die because that's what they do on Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
and it kind of that hadn't really been done so much before, and now it's got to that stage where you just expect it, and so when someone dies it's not really that shocking, unless perhaps it was Jon Snow. But then,
and also with the death thing, I feel like when Game of Thrones first started, it was quite cool that they really went there with the deaths. That was like a shocking thing about it. Now it's almost like fetishized and they just do it because it's like that's the thing.
It's
like,
headline grabbing.
Do you remember that one? I was watching a recap today because I couldn't remember a lot about the last season, where like the mountain pushes a guy against a wall and like splats his head. It just feels like a slapstick moment now. It's like a, you know, what gruesome deaths can we come up with?
Yeah.
But it's changed a lot, like, because I came to it quite late. I think I was only up to date when it was season 4, so I watched 1 to 4 back to back. In the first season, I think the reason it, like, everyone was so attracted to it is because up until then, all medieval sort of vibe, like medieval genre fantasy things had been kind of quite basic, and this one had kind of had an intellect to it and quite political, and you got that in the first season. But then it's increasingly just become more of a Dungeons and Dragons kind of thing, hasn't it?
I think what I like about Game of Thrones is the world building. I think it's that aspect of it where you travel to new locations with certain characters is what's great. But I wish there was more of that. Instead, it's kind of honing in on these characters, thinking that they've got these characters that are going to stand the test of time alongside, you know, Tony Soprano, Walter White. And they just do not compare, apart from, say, maybe Cersei Lannister. Or, you know, not even Jon Snow or, in my mind, Daenerys come close.
That's quite an interesting point about world building, though, because someone like Daenerys, I think, really sums that up in that in the first few seasons she was travelling with Khal Drogo around, kind of going to all these places. And then in the last, is it 2 seasons, she's been stuck in that city of Meereen. Kind of just, you've just been waiting for her to, like, she's built an army, she's done, now she's travelling across, like, finally she's travelling across, because that was so boring.
That was the creaking I was talking about before, where you can just feel them thinking,
they absolutely tanked
out
the character of Tyrion as well in that storyline. He was so good in the early seasons, then they took him over to Braavos, over to Meereen, and he's just wandering around.
I almost forget he's in this show.
When he used to be, like, the strongest thing about it. It's crazy.
Well, he's intellectual player. Like, he's supposed to be playing these mind games, and he hasn't had an opportunity to at all. So you just completely wasted what was a fantastic character for an entire season by just making him sit there and make, like, dick jokes or whatever. What was that? There was, like, a scene where he was talking to... Who's the...
Grey Worm. There is just literally a dick joke, and it's just like, right, move on, who are we going to next?
Is there, like, he even says, like, he's like, who's got a joke? Something like that.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's just ridiculous.
It does feel like there's too many characters, and they're kind of, well, not so much they've written themselves into a corner, but maybe George R. R. Martin's written them into a corner because he has the time and space in a book to do stuff, to do character development that they can't do. But increasingly it just feels like it's just zooming around every different character, and you spend 5 minutes with each character, and it kind of is, it gets across this really simple plot point about them of, like, ah, they say this, but they think this, and then you go across, and it just, I don't know, it just seems to go through the motions, a bit.
I agree, and I think the characters are so kind of drenched in cultural familiarity now, like, that when you sit down to watch an episode of Game of Thrones, it does feel like an event. I'll give it that. It always feels like an event, but then when a scene ends or an episode ends, you can't help but feel. Well, I feel flat. I feel like I didn't really get anything from that. But I think the majority of people would be like, "Oh, it was awesome. That interaction between these characters who haven't seen each other since season 2." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's great. But it should kind of pack more of a punch."
Perhaps some of the side characters have really, everyone kind of latches onto them more so as like favourite characters. Someone like Littlefinger. Sejora, yeah, people don't really, you don't really talk about them so much, like headline, they're not headline grabbing characters, unlike someone like Jon Snow, but they're really interesting because they are behind the scenes working things, and you forget about them, and then suddenly they'll pop up and you'll be like, damn, that was cool.
You could argue that like, Littlefinger's really the only interesting character, because all of them have become so good and evil, and he's the only one who's kind of straddling the middle, and you don't really know what he's going to do next, and which makes him interesting. I always like Yara Greyjoy. Lyanna Mormont, who's fairly new, but when it sets like the scene goes down to like Sam, and he's like, really awful like jokes about him being like a country bumpkin. I'm just like, I do not need this.
I'm not there for that. And from what I hear, his family, you're going to meet more of his family in the upcoming season. So, yeah.
But this is where it has become more of the spectacle. Because you look at last season and you think of that final battle. Was it Battle of the Bastards?
Yeah.
That's an astonishing episode.
It's a really good episode.
It's great.
So you can't...
But I think that's what I mean. I feel like those sequences and the budget being thrown its way is kind of, you know, it you can attribute that to, in my mind, the show's lack of quality elsewhere.
Yeah,
it's really weird because I feel like it's an unremarkable series filled with remarkable scenes. But the only reason that the remarkable scenes are there is because of the huge acclaim and the hype and the money thrown at it.
Yeah.
But it would only ever have got there had it been good in the first place. So it's like this cycle of its own downfall.
That's why the early seasons are good, because they didn't have that crazy budget to play with, so they had to make the
diamond. Yeah.
Whereas, I think I was saying to you guys the other day, like, if Game of Thrones now had the budget of like what are those like Stars Network kind of series you get, not Vikings, but maybe like smaller than that.
Black Sails, is that one of them?
Yeah, I don't know. Something like Black Sails. Yeah. If they had that kind of budget, it would not be good.
No,
it would, because you wouldn't be able to achieve those amazing scenes, and it would just be left on the kind of somewhat ropey script.
Yeah,
it's quite funny how this, because I feel like this has also happened with superhero films in a lot of ways. You look at Wonder Woman, and Wonder Woman's a really good film up until the final third, where it all becomes about the spectacle, and it becomes about this massive fight scene with all these explosions and stuff. And that's just the way those films have got. They throw, you know, studios throw $200 million at them, and they just expect a massive explosive fight without any content surrounding it. And it's the same problem that's now happened to Game of Thrones, where you just throw so much money at it, and you just, so everyone expects a massive fight of some description with huge amounts of CGI and whatever, without the scenes to back it up.
That also is like a recipe for it not to age well, because when you're just chasing like the most cinematic battle scene ever staged, just means in 10 years time someone's going to do that much better, because the technology is advanced. So I don't know whether it's so beloved right now, I don't know if it still will be in 5 or 10 years time, when other shows have been able to surpass it in the kind of production side of things.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Game of Thrones has done for cable TV what Lost did for network television back in 2004, and I think what that is it's kind of embedded itself as a culturally significant show now, and one that it will probably, in reviews for future TV shows, people will be comparing it to Game of Thrones, like people compare TV shows to Lost now. And I think for that, people will probably be talking about it in 10 years' time, but I don't think they'll be talking about it in the way that the team behind it would like them to, which is considering it one of the greats alongside, you know, Breaking Bad, The Sopranos, Mad Men. It won't be mentioned along those TV shows. It just won't. Mm-hmm. And if it is, I mean, I'll be very shocked.
It's interesting, we were talking about the characters kind of being boxed in, and you only get a bit of time with them. And then obviously an argument is that they should have standalone episodes where you spend time, which they've kind of done a little bit. And Entertainment Weekly were talking to David Benioff, the co-creator, about it recently. You know, he said That's a tough one, because once you pick one as your favourite, then everybody else gets excluded and it becomes like asking a grandfather which of his kids he likes best. I think it would be cool to have a whole season like that where you're following each character on separate stories. We just can't because we're pushing towards the end. And that's
I think that kind of says everything we need to know about his lack of confidence in his storytelling abilities.
And it's just quite cynical pushing towards the end, isn't it? It's like, oh, we haven't got time with this character stuff. Yeah, we just need to get a massive... We need to get the White Walkers down and...
Yeah. That, for me, is why... Why it just won't be considered one of the greats, because I think the best shows can do that with ease, and you don't even, you know, you don't feel like you're lacking in anything. You feel like you've seen a great episode of that TV show. Like, I hate to go on about it like I have done in previous episode, but The Leftovers, it absolutely nailed the standalone episode, and there have been lots of other TV shows that have done it, but Leftovers did it to such an impressive degree in its final season, which actually begins, begun in the UK now, if you want to watch it. It's like four or five characters, every single one's great. You can't, some might come into it, into the other one, into their episode, like in a cameo appearance. It could be a main character, just becomes a walk-in cameo in that episode, but everything you need to know about that character's storyline is kind of answered, resolved, without even realising it, fluidly, naturally. In Game of Thrones, like you say, it's very much like plot A to plot B, connecting to plot C. It's very ham-fisted.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Single Game of Thrones character I'd like to see an episode of solo. Like, you kind of get those Jon Snow ones, but they're just battles. Imagine an entire episode of just Jon Snow talking.
I can deal with like a Brienne episode or a Jaime episode, well, maybe, I don't know.
The Hound would be a good one. Just seeing him gallivanting around. But again, one would do,
I think it would make it more effective, because obviously they're working to hold this whole meet-up thing that's going to happen in season 7 where these main characters get together. Mm. I think if you had spent like an hour with this person and they were three-dimensional, you got to really know them, and then with another character, then when they did meet up, I think you'd feel a bit more satisfied by it.
I agree. I think I get another show that does that to some, you know, to a degree of success, but also sometimes not to success, is The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I think it does it, but the thing that The Walking Dead does, and it's what Game of Thrones would be brave to do, is they kind of throw these smaller characters to the forefront, where you spend time with one or two characters that aren't even, sometimes you can't even remember their name. You're like, who is this character? We now kind of spend an entire episode with them. And yeah, it doesn't work, but you kind of respect them for trying.
Yeah.
You know?
I think there's always the worry about going solo character, like an episode on a single character, and then you kind of feel like the obligation to give every character their own one. I know Arrested Development did an entire season where they focused on single characters.
It did not work.
Yeah, it didn't work at all. And so
it's an interesting
you kind
point.
Of run that risk of perhaps it just wouldn't stand up. And I think especially with the amount of pressure on Game of Thrones to deliver really good episodes, because so many people are watching and talking about it, I imagine it's just something they don't want to risk. And perhaps that's a difficulty of it, is that they can't take risks with this show anymore, because there are just so many people watching it and kind of who expect certain things from every character. And I'm sure, you know, we talk about George R.R. Martin spending so long writing this new book, and it's basically because he has so much pressure on his shoulders from fans who are obsessed with this show and obsessed with his books, and he needs to deliver something of the highest quality. Otherwise, people are just going to throw their toys out the pram and just be really upset if it's not 10 out of 10, 5 out of 5 a book or show.
I think most people sit down to watch Game of Thrones now, they kind of know what's going to happen because of all the theories that have been pieced. And I feel like there's no true surprises in this TV show anymore. Am I right in thinking that?
That's probably where the hype comes from, isn't it? It's because people enjoy the theorising and the spoilers and the big cliffhangers and all those moments, and that makes it, it's like a recipe for a talked about show.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of other things that I really want to rant about that you can feel free to tell me I'm talking bullshit. One, it really bugs me that, okay, so it's good to have a flawed character, but it annoys me when they're missold. So, for example, like, Daenerys is, I think, is like a despot, like an actual fucking mm-hmm. tyrant, but I think we're kind of encouraged to think that she's a real good, real hero. And I don't know, I think there's the potential that they will get it across that she's actually, like, when you look at what she's done, it's actually been quite exploitative, and maybe they will address that, and I hope they do. But it seems like they're not going to. It's just going to end for this, like, big marriage with her and Jon, and, like, hooray, she's, like, beating the White Walkers. And also, I thought Arya's story last season was, like, so bad when she was in Braavos. It was just every week it was like she had a little fight, then she got knocked down, then she got back up.
Mm.
And also, like, I was thinking, man, she's been a dick. Like, Jack and Hagar helped her out, like, every season, was a really good guy. And he was like, you know, come and join my order, I'll teach you the ways. She just fucked him over and just ditched. And we're supposed to be like, great. I was like, damn, that's not... just didn't seem good, like a good thing to me. But so there's that. And then, I don't know, sometimes I find the acting quite hammy.
I agree with that.
I think a lot of that is to do with the VFX thing. So I spoke to Maisie Williams about that last year and was asking her, kind of why, if is it problematic? And she definitely aired her frustrations with it. She said... particularly when you're trying to work with someone else, as you're both imagining something totally different, neither of you imagine exactly what they're going to put there when you're working with a green screen. And I was like, exactly what is it about giving an authentic performance that she finds difficult with a green screen? And she said, your eye line. So, like, she said, quote, they're like, look out to the castle, and you just think, well, how far away is it? Yeah. Is it right here? And although you can ask all of those questions, it never looks right. And when you watch it back, and you think, I can tell I'm looking at a green screen, even though for an audience member it may not register.
Yeah.
But for this audience member it does register. Like, those shots of, like, someone looking out at sea or looking at a fleet of ships, I'd almost just, like, see that glazed over, I'm looking at a green screen thing. I don't know if you get that.
I kind of do, actually, I've got to say. It's funny, because I think Maisie Williams is probably one of the, you know, she's in the upper rung of best actors on the show, I'd say. So it's funny that she watched her performance back and may sometimes feel that it's affected by
She's the most outspoken, though. Everyone very much toes the line. If you've ever done round tables with those actors, she's the one that always kind of, like, says what's on her mind a little bit.
I think it's interesting on the show that you have so many young actors who'd never really did anything before, because you can tell the calibre between someone like Kit Harington and even the guy who plays, like, Jorah or... like
Ian Glen.
Lena Headey and people like that.
Khaleesi.
Yeah, but there's something, like, they are really, like, those are some really good actors, and they do outshine some of the younger ones by quite a long way.
Yeah, I don't want to name any names, but I think Emilia Clarke, I mean, she seems like a lovely, lovely lady, and I'm sure she is, but sometimes her performance makes me want to scratch my eyes. Yeah, really. I feel really harsh now in case I ever meet her.
Also, a character whose name rhymes with Schmissandai.
Doesn't really. Yeah. But Lena Headey and Nicolai Coster-Waldau.
Yeah, they're great.
Absolutely fantastic. Without them. And back in the day when Charles Dance was on the show as well. I mean, that's a perfect
I miss Charles Dance, man. He was great.
Of high caliber. Yeah.
Even Stannis, I feel like you miss, because he was also one of those characters that wasn't too extreme. It was kind of oscillating somewhere in the middle of
he was
the
very
evil
interesting.
Good spectrum.
Yeah. What's her face? The red woman.
Melisandre.
Melisandre. Yeah. I really like her character. You know.
Really.
Yeah. I'm like, as someone who's quite an outspoken critic of this show, other people who like it can't really bear her, but I really like her character. I don't know, it's random. It's a bit of a rogue one for me.
It's a very stony face.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like we've just dicked on it now quite heavily.
Yeah. Well, but... I think like, so the reason why I do kind of criticise it a lot, whether it's now or down the pub with my mates or whatever, is because I just can't really understand why it has award success heaped upon it. It's won the Emmy, I believe, for 2 years in a row now, and it's been nominated every other year. And I think the last Emmys, it was like a historic win. It was a historic year where it's won them more than any other. And quite honestly, like, I've got a list of TV shows here. Like, it's up against like Better Call Saul. It was up against Mad Men when that was on. The Americans, Mr. Robot. I mean, The Leftovers wasn't even nominated, which says everything you need to know. But the fact that it won above these shows, even Homeland, which saw a bit of a resurgence, which was kind of far better than Game of Thrones season 5. Mm. And yet it won. And I think it literally is because of the cultural significance. Yeah. And that's not the right reason for something to win.
Exactly what it feels like. It's that they know that if Game of Thrones wins everything, it's going to get a heap load of headlines. It's going to, everyone's going to be talking about it. Like, everyone's going to be... I guess the hope is that everyone will tune in next year to make sure that they catch whatever's going on. Mm. Even though I just... It's made it really boring, and I'm glad that Game of Thrones isn't up for Emmys this year.
Yeah, it missed the deadline, didn't it?
Because there's so much, like, you know, seeing Atlanta do well at the Golden Globes. It's nice to see those new shows.
Fills you with hope.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm hoping Westworld, which obviously is what HBO have lined up to be the next Game of Thrones, but. I mean, maybe you guys are skeptical, but I really enjoyed the first season of Westworld.
I dislike Westworld more by the day.
Really?
I really like the premise was so. I was so intrigued by it and then just let down by it, and I just felt like it was convoluted and just being complex for complex sake, and I don't think it really got down to any of the philosophical questions it lined up.
I am a massive Lost fan, so
true.
No wonder I love Westworld.
I agree with you. Like, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good show. And I think, like, some of the twists when they came about, like, there was the Man in Black thing, and I was just like, had a massive smile on my face.
Well, this is the thing. I think with a show like Westworld, I think it lends itself to intense theory and debate, and you do kind of generate the kind of the conclusions yourself. But yet, when we watched them, I still felt satisfied and happy, and kind of got chills about what I was seeing, even though I kind of knew what was going to happen. Whereas in Game of Thrones, it happens like, oh yeah, well of course, we knew this years ago, and I don't feel a sense of excitement with what I'm watching.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen with Game of Thrones?
Well, I just hope Ser Jorah don't die. Is he cured of his grayscale now?
There's a clip in the new trailer where his arm, like, comes through some little grate. Ooh. And it's like freaky.
See, that's the only thing I care about.
That's all I care about too. I'm just in for that subplot. I hope he turns to her side and manages to marry her. I just want to talk like Ser Jorah, like, on a daily basis. Just coming to the office like, pass me that phone. he's a
best. I think there are going to be lots of really good battles, which I'm sure will be worthy of all the acclaim. But beyond that, I think there's going to be lots of talking where not much happens.
Yeah. I think everyone should die fighting each other, and the throne is left empty. And it's the kind of the impact is like everyone's, you know, clamoring for power. Yeah. And
everyone. Yeah.
I hope they do something like that, because that was another thing I wanted to talk about today. Is that, like, it is a somewhat political show, but it feels like it misses opportunities to have any kind of, like, political impact or, like, poignancy. So, obviously, The Handmaid's Tale right now, everyone's loving, because it's, like, you see that reflection with what's going on right now. It's, and Game of Thrones could 100% do that. There are even characters that, you know, people are always like, oh, Donald Trump's Joffrey or whatever.
Yeah.
It might not be that straightforward, but it could have some parallels, but instead it just seems to be, like, just detached from all reality.
I kind of get why it's not, because they're trying to obviously appeal to everyone on the political spectrum. But at the same time, you're right, it would be, they could make some really interesting points, but they just don't. They really, I think they almost go out of their way not to pull any direct comparisons between anyone.
I think in to play devil's advocate, I think it would be kind of abusing their power to do that, in a sense, because I feel like these guys, through their inability to do it already, have kind of shown that maybe they're not the right guys to do that. So to do it would be really, really obvious. And I think if you're going to do it, it has to be in a way where you can, it's there for you to take if you want it.
I should be clear, I don't mean that it should, like, reference what's literally happening right now.
Yeah.
But it should, like, expose political truth that, like, transcend time, you know, that we can recognise whenever they're happening. It doesn't really tend to do that.
Yeah, I think it's because they're struggling enough with the number of characters and storylines they have. They are struggling.
It'd be difficult to ham-fist some sort of political ideas in there. I don't know. It, I don't know if it's a show that it probably could lend itself to it, but they've really just decided not to. The worst they get is just Cersei being a power hungry person,
which
now
is,
takes over and kills everyone.
Yes,
that's about it.
What do you think they're going to do with the spin-offs? So they're taking the unprecedented move because it's so popular where they can afford to develop four ideas at once.
Five
is it?
Yeah.
And I can't remember the writers now, but they've got a couple of them are very like stock choices, and then a couple of them are quite unusual. I think the Mad Men writers developing one. So I don't know which one will win out, whether they'll go for a slightly unusual one or whether they'll go for, you know, the bankable option. But
I think go for something completely different. Yeah. Just choose somewhere like not even in Westeros, just somewhere in that world without any references, just because they could, whatever they do, people are going to watch it and they could do something really interesting, just something completely different to Game of Thrones, but because it's like got this link, everyone would watch it anywhere, so they really could take a risk. But again, like we were saying earlier, they're not really, it's not a risk-taking show particularly, especially not anymore.
It's so true, because like, you know, Star Wars could have done that, like whatever the standalone films were going to be, people would have gone to see them. But so far, and judging by the recent firing of the directors, they sound like they're going to go for something more straightforward.
Right.
And also, like it being HBO, you think they'd want to? You got to remember it is HBO, even though it doesn't feel like an HBO show to me at all. They do. It should be a network where they're willing to take that risk with a spin-off, because they don't even really do spin-offs or sequels.
No.
It's not really in their DNA. So if they're going to do it, they should at least try and make it very unique.
It's interesting talking about the Han Solo film. I met someone who was working on it over the weekend, and they said that Lord and Miller were doing all this improv stuff, and it was just really weird and wacky. But then they decided to get Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote it. He wrote Empire Strikes Back. Apparently, he got really annoyed at it and controlling, and it really, apparently they fired them because they wanted to please this old guard, and so it was just keeping it really narrow-minded, kind of keeping it along the very same tracks as it's always been and not wanting to take risks at all.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much the same, you know, they're going to get in. I mean, it's going to be George R. R. Martin keeping everything afloat. It's going to be kind of, I imagine it'll probably be him having the final word on everything, the same HBO bosses doing everything. Like, it's not going to be, I really doubt it'll be anything new at all.
No, I think they'll probably try and emulate the success they've had, and it could find the show out, and it could be eventually what dampens the show's popularity in the future.
Yeah.
If I mean, it could be. I'm thinking of like Better Call Saul, for example, prequel to Breaking Bad, but that's literally being done through passion of that world, Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel money grabbing. It doesn't feel like they're just trying to cash in on the popularity. It feels really honest, and it is completely
but
different.
But yet still, I would argue that it's funny because they've done Better Call Saul just for the love of it, and like you read about them, and I've spoken to them, they've just said, you know, we weren't sure about whether we should return to that world, but we really wanted to. So I have like so much like admiration and affection for that, but I still think they should have let it be. I don't think Better
Call
Saul was worthwhile. I think
you don't agree with all the headlines saying Better Call Saul is
better than Breaking Bad. Crazy talk. And Fear the Walking Dead hasn't really had the impact they wanted. I think the track record is not good for spin-offs of TV series.
Except for Fraser.
except for Fraser. It's funny, I mean, to bring it back to The Leftovers, because that's what I always do. I was speaking to Damon Lindelof, who's the showrunner and co-creator, who also did Lost. And he was reeling off his favourite TV shows. He loves Game of Thrones, which I find quite interesting. But he would class his favourite TV shows as Breaking Bad and The Wire and Mad Men. And what he loves about those shows is that when you talk about them, no one ever really thinks about the... no one ever goes... talks about the final episode. They talk about kind of, they always have a favorite season. Oh, I love especially The Wire.
Yeah.
I love the season three. I love the season four. I love the docs, season two. But whereas with Lost, it's very much, oh, the ending was shit. And he really wanted, with The Leftovers, he really wanted it to be with the former, where people just kind of reflect upon it as a series. Thinking about that with Game of Thrones, I just genuinely do think it will have, if say they come out with a really, really, really crap final episode. Do you think fans of Downton Abbey be like, oh, that show is awful? And we'll just always be like, Game of Thrones ended in that way. What? Like Dexter, for example.
Yeah, I mean, the trajectory it's on is all about what happens next, so it is kind
it's
of,
reliant, isn't
it's
it?
It's kind of reliant on the finale. This has all been leading to, you know, the winter is coming, winter is here stuff. It is all leading to an end point.
But I think it's going to end in a really underwhelming way for a lot of people. I really do.
I think
I'll love that. Yeah. I don't think I'll love that because I'll be like, ha-ha. I think I'll love it in a way. It's like, well, fair enough. End it in... Only if they want it to end it in an underwhelming way. If they go out and they want to make it really grandstanding and it just
everyone
is
dies.
A damp squib, then it would be very, very tragic.
Yeah. I don't know. I think people will look back and go... Because I already look back and go, oh, man, like, season three was amazing. Or whichever one the Red Wedding was in, that whole lead-up where you kind of had Rob's army and then, you know, the Battle of the Five Armies or whatever it was called. I think that was... so great. That was like really
season two as well with the Battle of Blackwater. I like that.
Yeah. That was great. Yeah.
So I think they already have that to go back on. I think people will look back on it and go, those first three seasons, even the fourth to a kind of extent, were really good. And then after that finished and after they killed off so many main characters and only had a few, then people go, yeah, it kind of lost track a bit.
Mm.
And so, unless they can really pull it off with this last season, which, you know, they could, the last two seasons, sorry, you know, they could make it really great. But I think it's just going to be a matter of people going to be talking about certain moments. They're not going to be talking about the season. They're going to be going, oh my God, I remember when Jon and Khaleesi met up and like that one moment was amazing. And then they're just going to spend the next like hour talking and just being like, oh my God, you're my cousin or whatever.
I even think that moment's gonna fall flat. I really do. I just can't see it really igniting the screen.
John's a very stoic, unemotional character. Mm. So is she really sort of that she's gonna stand in a room and be like, hey,
yeah,
you seem like an all right person. Yeah, you do too. Let's maybe go and sort out all those fucking zombies that are up north. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And then critics across the world would be like, it was an amazing moment.
Yeah.
It was up there with the greatest TV moments in history. So no, it wasn't.
Or maybe they'll really underplay it. I would quite like that. They literally just like, they're walking along, they accidentally bump into each other and they're like, oh yeah.
How do they accidentally bump into each other, the rulers of these
I don't know.
In some like tavern somewhere. Imagine Daenerys in a tavern.
Oh, she's down the tavern again, looking like some mead, as she always is.
The dragon's just outside, chained up.
That's how I'd do it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm leaving it on like on a positive note. I am still like looking forward to covering it. I'm looking forward to watching each episode and... It is fun, you know, when it starts up and you're like, and it drops in, whether it's on a cold open or the first scene of where it's going to be and what it's going to look like. And you know you are going to see something on screen that's going to be incredibly well constructed and it's, you know, the VFX to be absolutely seamless and it to just look really amazing. So I am excited for it to come back. Maybe let's just, everyone just chill out like 5%.
Yeah. I mean, any show that gets people watching TV or talking about it once the episode's finished, you know, it's great. And I think Game of Thrones is you know, chief TV show for that.
Anything that gets people away from Love Island for 5 minutes.
Chris.
Oh, I have to pry myself away.
That's a whole new podcast.
Maybe it will have concluded by then and I'll have my life back, I don't know. All right, well, Jacob, Jack, thanks as
Thank
always.
You.
Thanks
Thank you.
And see listeners in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, are you following us on Twitter? You should definitely follow us on Twitter at Kernels and on Instagram and on iTunes and RSS feed. We're working on all these different mediums by which everyone listens, trying to get a handle on them. So Kernels should be available everywhere soon, I hope. All right, cheers.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.